Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 14 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we discuss big news for fans of Liga MX in the United States, our thoughts regarding Fox's coverage of the Champions League this week, as well as lots of news from Major League Soccer. I'd like to welcome our special guest this week, Jonathan Tannewald. Jonathan, how are you?
Doing very well, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, you taking the time to be on here. And the first segment we do, Jonathan, is what we've been watching. So from this past week, any highlights or any memorable incidents or anything from a soccer media perspective that was remarkable or basically kind of something to worth talking about? How about you, Kartik? Let's have you start off in terms of what you've been watching this past week.
Yeah, so I watched the Ingolstadt-Bayern game on Fox on FS1 on Saturday, and I thought the Fox's Bundesliga coverage, I think, is getting better and better, and I'd love to get Jonathan's take on that in a few minutes. Kate Abdo has increased the level, upgraded the level in the studio. Ian Joy did a great job, but now he's freed up to fill other roles, and I think Eric Winalda is getting stronger and stronger every week, regardless of who he's paired with. I mean, in a lot of cases, he's carrying Jovan Karofsky or whoever the other analyst is. But I actually enjoyed their broadcast of this game. They're giving us Derek Ray a lot. Derek Ray and Owen Hargreaves a lot on Bundesliga calls also. So including this game with Ingolstadt. So this was a very, very good game to watch. For me, listening to Winalda now on the Bundesliga broadcast and Kate Abdo bringing the best out of him is, and I know this is going to get a lot of our listeners angry, to me it's more interesting than listening to Rebecca Lowe and Robbie Earl and Robbie Musto go through the motions and say things that I think are pretty predictable. Not that they don't do a credible professional job, they do, but when Kyle Martino is not on NBC, which he wasn't this past weekend, to me the analysis, I don't want to say it's stale because it's good analysis, but it's predictable. It's entirely predictable from both of them, and you kind of know what's going on in the studio. Maybe it's just familiarity breeding a little bit of contempt for me. So I've been watching more and more Fox's Bundesliga coverage in that time slot where they compete with one another, the 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time Bundesliga versus 10 a.m. Eastern Time Premier League games. But I did go back to NBC to watch Liverpool Spurs, which was on NBC, proper NBC over there, and NBCSN pregame, and I thought it was a disappointing game. NBC did a great job with the broadcast, but it was a disappointing game in that Mauricio Pochettino did not have a game plan to counter a high-pressing side, something you would think he'd be familiar with since he does it himself. But Ben Davies was a bit of a nightmare at left-back for Spurs, but more notably for me, they didn't pass out of the back particularly well. And that didn't go well for them. And then on Sunday, the assorted matches I kept an eye on. Obviously, the Leicester City story, which I will say NBC did a good job with that on Sunday. And then on Monday, Liam McHugh stepped in for Rebecca Lowe, which is becoming almost a regular occurrence during on weekdays, which is good. And McHugh does a very, very credible job. And obviously, his forte is doing NHL and Notre Dame football and other things for NBCSN, but he stepped in and did a good job around the Bournemouth Manchester City match, and Aguero being dropped again, but then Jesus getting injured and Aguero sliding in. So that was kind of it for me this week.
Yeah, there's a lot to kind of dive into there. For me, the Liverpool Spurs game, I mean, to me, the first half was like ferocious. It was high tempo. I mean, in terms of pressing, yeah, it would have been great if it was more competitive between Liverpool and Spurs. But Sadio Mane, that just goes to show what a difference he makes. And I thought it was a really entertaining game. I enjoyed it. Jonathan, what's your perspective in terms of the Bundesliga's coverage on Fox with Kate Abdo joining and kind of rearranging the deck chairs a little bit there in terms of what they bring and if it improves the quality of the actual broadcast?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, for those of your listeners who don't know, I've been a fan of and a watcher of the Bundesliga for a very long time, since well before it got on Fox, to the point where for a year I stumped up for the Sky Deutschland satellite package on my dish box. which was not cheap, but I think probably was worth the money in the end. I don't watch a lot of studio coverage, usually because I'm watching games so much and jumping back and forth. I think Kate Abdo is a smart hire by Fox. Obviously, she is going to play a role not only with their Bundesliga coverage, but with their World Cup coverage down the road. She was already part of their Women's World Cup coverage in 2015, their coverage of the FIFA election. So she's got a big role to play. She did a long interview recently with Grant Wall of Sports Illustrated that I'd recommend for the listeners when they are done listening to this show, of course. It's interesting, Kardik, to hear you say that she brings the best out of Eric Winalda, because Eric Winalda rarely needs any prompting, does he?
Right. She knows how to beat him, I guess.
Well, so the things that I watched over the last few days, it's interesting that I watched only bits and pieces of Bayern Ingolstadt. I know Derek Ray a little bit. I've interviewed him a few times. I'm very happy when Fox and BT get together, and because he and Owen Hargreaves are the BT sport crew. And so I guess the Bundesliga syndicates their commentary internationally. But the game I watched, believe it or not, was Dortmund-Darmstadt, because it was Christian Pulisic versus Terrence Boyd. And that came with not the best performance by Pulisic, but Terrence Boyd's first goal in the Bundesliga, which I think is a pretty big deal. There was a time when a lot of us thought that he might be coming to MLS, but going to Darmstadt is a move up. Obviously, it might not be a move up forever, since they're nailed to the bottom, I believe, of the standings at this point. But great to see him score his first goal in the Bundesliga and to see that he is coming back into form. The other games I watched, admittedly, were MLS preseason games. Very nice to see that a lot of them have been available on YouTube this year, which makes them easy not only to watch, but for those of us in the media to distribute to our local audiences and maybe expand the reach a little bit that way. I've watched Minnesota United a few times to see how they're coming together ahead of their MLS debut. I watched the Atlanta United Chattanooga game for a few minutes, and boy, does Atlanta look like they have some very dangerous attacking players on that team. And, Minnesota is in this preseason tournament in Portland. One of the other teams there is Vancouver. They opened the season against the Union, so I've been watching a bit of that.
Now, Kartik, going back just for a minute to NBC's coverage, and you're comparing it to Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga, I do agree that Monday's basically pre-match, halftime and post-match analysis with Liam McHugh and the two Robbies, to me, it was very flat. And I think Liam doesn't have the same energy that Rebecca does. So the two Robbies kind of responded to that, too. It just seemed like a very flat analysis, nothing kind of exciting. It was kind of just like humdrum kind of feedback or analysis. I personally still enjoy even the two Robbies, you mean kind of the two of them together with Rebecca. With Kyle, I prefer it with Kyle, but I think there's still enough there. At the same time, with Bundesliga, it'll be interesting this weekend because we've got the FA Cup coverage coming up. And so Kate Abdo is going to be leading the FA Cup coverage. And then Ian Joy goes back into the hosting position for the Bundesliga. So that's a great thing about Ian Joy, too. He's very versatile. He can be a host. He can be a co-commentator. He can be an analyst. And that appears to be kind of the flexibility with Ian. I think Ian's going to be stepping in whenever necessary to fill whatever positions they need, which is great for Ian Joy. But overall, and that's the thing with the Bundesliga, I think the actual football, I think we can all agree, is great. The atmospheres are, to me, some of the best in the world. The only tough thing is just that just the scheduling, and it's scheduling almost exactly the same as the Premier League, and it's difficult. My allegiance is usually with the Premier League, because I prefer that league historically, but that's the tough thing for the Bundesliga, and I don't see that changing anytime soon with the fan support within the Bundesliga.
So can I throw a question to you about Chris?
Sure, absolutely.
How much of a factor in the viewing preferences of the wider audience, you and I both spend a lot of time studying, but they can be hard to pin down. How much of a factor along the way do you think the many American players in the Bundesliga will be? Is that going to be enough of a card for Fox in the Bundesliga to play to get people to watch those games?
I don't think so. Not quite yet. So Christian Pulisic is probably the one shining example of somebody that could push the envelope a little bit in terms of basically put in the question in soccer fans' minds in the U.S., like, should I watch the Dortmund game, or should I watch, I don't know, Hull City against Arsenal or something like that? The more Americans that are playing within the Bundesliga, definitely. I think that's going to help grow those numbers slowly but surely. If you have a Pulisic that's going to, basically kind of take it to the next level in terms of performance and assists and goals, and he's doing a great job, that can change it slowly but surely. But I don't think it's going to be kind of a sharp spike upwards. I think it's slow and gradual. Because at the end of the day, and that's the thing too about the Premier League, there aren't a lot of Americans left in the Premier League. But it's still, I think a lot of it is kind of in terms of what we've been accustomed to watching for half a decade or a decade or more for some. It's tough. And that's the thing with the Bundesliga and Fox. They have a difficult, challenging job ahead of them in terms of trying to continually increase those numbers. But the American aspect definitely will help, but I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk. In terms of what I saw this past weekend, Kartik or Jonathan, I'm not sure if you saw this one, but the Arsenal Hull game, this was interesting from the perspective of those the two controversial decisions, which seems so long ago now, too, after this Bayern Munich mauling of Arsenal. But the first goal, which was Alexis Sanchez, the handball that went in the back of the net, that was ruled a goal. And then towards the end of the game, too, with the Hull City, unfortunately, the defender hitting kind of it's more of his shoulder or upper arm, and then Arsenal receiving the penalty on that one and scoring it. What was interesting from my perspective was the consensus from the two Robbies was that the Alexis Sanchez goal should have stood, and this was like kind of the halftime analysis, and they kind of went through their reasons and said even though it was handball, there's nothing he could have done about it. But what was interesting was post-match, NBC Sports contacted the PGMOL by phone, and the Referees Association said that the goal should not have been allowed because no matter whether it's a natural or unnatural use of the hands, a goal cannot be allowed if it's scored with a hand. So that, I thought, was really some great analysis and kind of hearing it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. For Hull fans, that's awful just because in terms of feeling cheated in this game, especially in the position they're in terms of just trying to escape from relegation. But it just goes to show a couple of things. One is that the analysts aren't always correct, which I think we all know that. But sometimes it's good to kind of hear it from the experts. And the second thing is how beneficial it is that NBC is in close contact with the PGMOL. On the other hand, I think with Joe Magnick from the FIFA Match Commissioner with Fox Sports, it's good to get his insight. But I don't know how credible his insight is in comparison to the Referees Association. So that's probably up for debate. I know there's some questionable calls that he made or insights he gave, I think, last summer for the Gold Cup. But still, interesting enough in terms of kind of the perspective we get for the TV viewers and trying to understand why the goal should have stood or not.
You would know this, Chris. Does UEFA offer that to its rights holders?
I don't think so. I think in terms of, from what my understanding is just in terms of relationships. So I think it's NBC being proactive and contacting the PGMOL. Same thing for Fox Sports. I think it would just be them being proactive and contacting the UEFA directly or kind of the referee side of things there in terms of just trying to establish a contact and saying like, hey, if we do have questions on air, would it be possible to get your opinion kind of straight up?
But I don't know how high up UEFA's order of caring boxes. I mean, NBC obviously and the Premier League have a very tight relationship now that's got a lot of money behind it. I just don't know if Fox and UEFA or Fox and the Bundesliga. I mean, obviously, if it was MLS, they could call Peter Walton. But I don't know what that relationship is like with UEFA and the Bundesliga.
Exactly. And especially with UEFA as a whole, if it's Champions League, you've got every single basically country in the world that's broadcasting the Champions League. So, but I think NBC having a close relationship with the Premier League and also, I think it was last season when I think Arlo White and Graeme Lasseau and Lee Dixon went to the PGMOL and kind of spent a day with the referees and kind of got some insight in terms of how difficult that job is and everything that they go through. That probably helped in terms of kind of just establishing a closer relationship and good contacts there. But you're right, Jonathan, in terms of that might be an advantage for NBC that maybe Fox doesn't have so much with, I mean, whether it's the Bundesliga or UEFA or other associations. Something else I watched this weekend, especially because for me personally as a Swansea City fan, I'm going through the whole relegation cycle in terms of just trying to hope that my team escapes it. So far, so good. But for the Gold Rush, I watched the 10 o'clock games on Saturday, the Eastern Time games, the Premier League matches with Gold Rush, because I wanted to kind of stay up to date in terms of what was happening with Crystal Palace and Sunderland and Hull City. And for me, that's a great way to kind of keep track of all the games that are happening all at once. Without just focusing on one game and then missing out on everything else. So that was a great day for me too, because Crystal Palace and Sunderland, I think both lost and gave Swansea the advantage. Speaking of Swansea, I watched the game. Actually, I didn't watch the game. So Swansea-Leicester, possibly the biggest game of the season for Swansea in terms of, if they would win this game, that would definitely push them up into sixth from bottom. This one was interesting for me because my daughter had a travel soccer game at the same exact time. So I wasn't able to watch the game live, but I couldn't watch it on delay later. I couldn't wait. So what I did was I listened to the match. So I got the TuneIn app, which is on iOS and Android. And if you listen to the BBC World Service through that app, you can get you can get the Radio 5 live broadcast, the radio commentary of Swansea against Leicester on the Sunday. And if you listen to it directly through BBC 5 Live, through whether it's apps or through the web, you'll get a message saying that, sorry, due to rights restrictions, we can't show you this game or play this game. But if you go through BBC World Service, you can actually get it. And for me, it was an enjoyable day. I mean, I was really sucked into that game and just was feeling so excited that they could actually win it 2-0, and makes me a much happier person. And actually, in terms of my weekends, it makes them more tolerable. other things I was watching too, just and feel free to chime in, guys, if you saw any of this too. On Tuesday, I watched the Benfica against Dortmund game. And I was kind of looking between PSG and Barcelona or Benfica and Dortmund. I ended up watching the first half of Benfica Dortmund, which was non-stop tempo to begin the game, really open-ended, back and forth. You had Gary Tapas commentating. But as the game went on, I actually decided to do the multi-screen option on Fox Sports Go and have half of the screen with Benfica Dortmund and then the other half of the screen with PSG against Barca, side by side. And that was a great way to kind of keep an eye on both matches. One of the things I thought in terms of the Champions League on Fox, and this is a question, maybe it's a question for another show, in terms of going in more in depth, but I'm wondering, is it time for Fox Sports to feature the best UEFA Champions League games on FS1 instead of always putting the English Premier League teams on? And for example, next week we've got FS1 is putting on Sevilla against Leicester, which in itself I'm sure will be a great game. But at the same time on FS2, it's Porto against Juventus. And to me personally, I probably think the Porto-Juventus game might be more exciting to watch. Also, I think on the Tuesday, FS1 has Man City against Monaco. Sorry, Kartik. And FS2 has Leverkusen against Atleti. And to me, like, Leverkusen against Atleti is probably going to be more interesting than the Man City-Monaco game. What do you guys think in terms of... we know why they do it, because it's for TV ratings, but do you guys think that, maybe Fox should reconsider, the way they schedule games?
I think the ratings factor is so strong still. The degree to which the English Premier League teams... And you can probably add Barcelona and Real Madrid to that.
Right.
But those teams draw audiences that are so much bigger, even than Bayern Munich, which you would think, if Bayern Munich was playing Juventus or some other team, you would think Bayern Munich would be able to, and they haven't been able to yet.
That's
entirely blame them. And they remember, they do want fans, and we're going to get into this more, I think, a little later, they do want fans to call their cable providers if they don't carry Fox Sports 2 and complain to them about it. And the only way they're going to do that is to put desirable stuff on Fox Sports 2. Mm-hmm. The one thing I would say, and I don't think this so much applies to the knockout rounds because there's only two games going on at a time, but during the group stage, they do the, you know, the multi-match whip-around show. They put it on Fox Soccer Plus and on their streaming. I'd like to see them put that on Fox Sports 1 once or twice because it's really entertaining. Mm-hmm. And it gets you everything. And I think it would give the viewer in the U.S. more of a taste of everything that's going on than just picking one featured game with a Chelsea or a Manchester City.
Kartik, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have to admit that I didn't watch Champions League this week. I generally don't watch Champions League. It's midweek. It's mid-afternoon. It just conflicts with other things. And to me, the games are never too interesting. But a game like Leverkusen-Atleti, I would watch. To me, that's interesting. I mean, seeing Bayern play Arsenal twice a year is not interesting to me. I know PSG beat Barcelona, but I've seen that matchup a bunch of times. Not interesting to me. Manchester City-Monaco, not really very interesting. Although Monaco has been very good this year, right? And they're leading Liga R, so maybe that's a sleeper. But I'd love to see more games like Leverkusen Atleti. Ratings are the driver, and we live in a big club world, and that's part of the reason why Champions League isn't very compelling to me, because it's the same clubs winning Champions League every year, and it's the same matchups in the knockout stages, and the same thing seems to happen in the group stage every year. The PSG defeat of Barcelona is a little bit of a curveball to that, but still, it's PSG. It's not Leverkusen. It's not Schalke. It's not a club like that beating Barcelona. I like Jonathan's idea about the multi-match 90. I think that's something that could help build the profile of Champions League, particularly on the final group stage games when there's a lot at stake and qualification for the next round or the team, or also qualification third place going to Europa League is at stake. But for me, I tend to like Europa League better. I'm going to watch Europa League today. I didn't watch Champions League this week. So it's about competitiveness. I know that those sexy clubs, although it seems like one English club that's sexy is falling to the Europa League every year for Fox. And of course they will show Manchester United today, but beyond that, I know that Europa League isn't as marketable as Champions League. But to me, if you're into competitive soccer, it's probably more interesting.
I like the idea of the whip around coverage. The challenge, I think, that actually NBC has had with the Premier League when they have done it before for, I think, New Year's Day and a couple other times they've done it. There's been a lot of people complaining, like, why aren't you showing the Arsenal game? I think that's one thing. There's always going to be people complaining no matter what, so Fox can't win. But I do like the idea, especially, the multi-match 90 to me is probably the best thing that Fox Sports does. I mean, I really love it. And it's a great way to experience the Champions League, especially those group stages where there's so many matches going on and things are happening so quickly that it's impossible for you to kind of figure out, okay, which game do I watch, but also what's happening at the different matches. It's amazing how much things go on during those games. And if you just watch FS1 or FS2, I think you're missing out. But at the end of the day, I think it's actually, for next week's games, though, guys, I think that the Leverkusen against Atleti, I would say, would actually probably get greater TV ratings on FS1, if it was on FS1, than Man City against Monaco. I mean, Monaco, you're not going to get a lot of people watching that one. We've seen that by the League One, Ligue 1 TV numbers. Yes, Monaco is the top of the table, and it's an interesting game to watch. Man City still is not kind of in the top tier of, the most watched Premier League teams either. Although with Pep, in terms of being in the Champions League, and that adds a different dynamic. I would think with Leverkusen, with the Chicharito effect, Atleti, Diego Simeone, and Antoine Griezmann, and you go down the list, that one by itself in isolation could get more viewers than Man City against Monaco. At the same time, you know that people would be complaining like crazy, like, why aren't you showing the Man City game on FS1, and why have you pushed it to FS2? But I think it's something for Fox to at least consider and maybe test. They haven't done it yet, but maybe in the future, maybe they'll kind of think about, okay, maybe we'll just switch it up a little bit. Because at the same time, I mean, to me, really, the Premier League really at this point is more of a Europa League competition than it is a Champions League competition. I mean, Arsenal is probably going to be out. You've got Man City, hopefully they'll do well. Leicester, I mean, Leicester is a big question mark. But it just seems the Premier League is becoming more of a...
Yeah, the Premier League, I think there's a very good, strong likelihood the Premier League will be out of Europe. Or not out of Europe, sorry, out of the Champions League completely. I mean, I think Monaco will beat Man City. I think Sevilla, Leicester...
Sevilla should win.
Leicester's just not... Right. Yeah, right. So I think the Premier League will probably be done with the Champions League.
Let me say this about the Bayer Leverkusen Athletic game, which I agree is going to be a great one. But the factor... is in terms of viewership and interest is whether Chicharito plays. And it's a little bit the same as Fox has to deal with its Bundesliga coverage. When people ask me all the time, why don't they put Borussia Dortmund on FS1 every week? And the answer is because they don't know until an hour before, like all the rest of us, if Christian Pulisic is going to play. Mm-hmm. If Chicharito is not playing on Tuesday, then, you know, the ratings appeal of that game drops considerably. The other factor involved, and I've noticed this is something that you see in particular on the days when there are only two games. ESPN Deportes gets a slice of the Champions League rights in Spanish. Usually, the ESPN Deportes game is on Fox Sports 2 in English. I'm not sure whether that's because ESPN Deportes has wider carriage. I don't know if they do at this point. I don't know what the numbers are. Mm-hmm. But it does give an option for viewers who don't have Fox Sports 2. And it also, as I've said before, if they were to put Man City on Fox Sports 2, just the way that they've probably been there before, so have Arsenal, so have Chelsea, if people get that annoyed, call your cable provider and tell them that you want Fox Sports 2. And I think at this point, the only major provider nationally that doesn't give Fox Sports 2 to everybody is Comcast. And I suspect that within the next... at most 12 to 18 months, that might get sorted because I think that's when that carriage deal comes up for renewal.
Yeah, that's good news. And we'll get more into that a little bit later, too.
That ESPN, that point Jonathan made about ESPN Deportes is a very, very good point. That's escaped my mind in previous shows, but I have noticed that during the group stage, the games that were on FS2 generally were the games that were carried on Deportes as well. And there may have only been one or two exceptions during the group stage. That was generally the rule of thumb, which hurt the case of Fox to try and get FS2 on, get people to call and call their cable providers if they got Deportes, because they were seeing those games anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's a different audience. I'm not sure how much overlap of the audience.
True, that's true too.
English and Spanish speakers. I don't know. Chris, maybe you do.
Yeah, that I don't know. I'm not sure. I know the ESPN Deportes numbers are a lot smaller, but it's a good point too in terms of FS2. I mean, we know that FS2, I mean, has a difficult time getting TV numbers too, just in terms of distribution. But FS2 plus ESPN Deportes combined, I mean, that helps at least try to get distributed that game out there. But in terms of overlap, I'm not sure on that one. In other Champions League news, so the Bayern against Arsenal game, for those who missed it, it was John Strong and Stuart Holden commentating. And I thought both of them did a great job. No complaints there. They're also going to be doing, Kartik, the Manchester City against Monaco game next week. And then for today's Europa League games, I think Keith Costigan is going to be doing some of the commentating, both this round and the next round. But
well, that's good that Fox is using John Strong to call these Champions League knockout games. That's an appropriate use of his time and his talents. It's unfortunate they haven't done that the previous 2 years when they've had the ability to do that with him. Maybe they weren't comfortable with a broadcast partner, and now they are with Stu Holden. Maybe that was the consideration, but I'm very glad that that's happened, because I think he's probably at this point the elite American commentator voice, and mm-hmm. We need to get him as much exposure. Now, this sounds like it's a cause, but maybe it is for a lot of us who are American. And we need to get John Strong as much exposure calling big, relevant matches to international audiences, to the audience that doesn't necessarily watch Major League Soccer or the U.S. men's national team regularly in this country. So I'm glad Fox is doing that.
From my side, I don't think it's a cause. I think that they're both are good enough to be at that level. And we saw that from John Strong yesterday. In terms of his calls for the goals, I mean, they stand just as good as any other commentator out there. And Stuart Holden has come a long way and continues to improve. So I think the two of them combined, it's probably a hint that we're going to get John Strong and Stuart Holden through each stage of the Champions League for some of these big games, probably all the way through to the final, where I'm sure they'll be commentating that too. So hats off to both of them for doing a great job there. In terms of the Champions League coverage on Fox Sports, just a couple more things before we move on to the next segment. I really think, and this is something from we've talked about a little bit in the past before too, but I think Fox should consider renaming the Champions League pregame show to something like Fox Soccer News or Fox Soccer Update. Because when I watch it, there's very little actually pregame coverage. It's I watched, I think, 10 or 15 minutes of it on Tuesday, and again about 10 or 15 minutes on Wednesday, and it featured zero Champions League coverage. I know there's a little bit probably at the beginning and a little bit at the end, but for the most part, for example, on Tuesday they talked about a player not coming to MLS because of the Trump ban. The second thing was, I think, they were talking about when the MLS games were going to be on FS1. They had a segment with Joe Macnick and Alexi Lalas talking about video assistant referees in Major League Soccer. And then Wednesday they talked about Timothy Tillman, who's at Bayern Munich and on the radar for the U.S. youth team, as well as Bob Bradley possibly going to LAFC, and then also talking about the MLS season that starts 2 weeks from today, or around by this time. I know that, I mean, a lot of that is kind of from Grant Wall in terms of having him as a Fox Sports correspondent, reporter. But it's almost like a bait and switch. I mean, you're tuning in to watch Champions League pregame and ends up being Fox Soccer News. I don't know. To me, I prefer if they just called it Fox Soccer News and they could throw in some Champions League pregame stuff in there too. But that's my thoughts on that one. Jonathan?
I wish they'd call it a 45-minute pregame show instead of a half hour and then 15 minutes, because they bill it as two separate entities. And, you know, look, I don't know if anybody's going to watch a segment called Fox Soccer. I mean, you could call it, I'd call it the Fox Soccer Report.
Right.
Bring back a really old name.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
You know, I don't know how that would affect the number of people watching. You could probably argue that whoever is going to watch is already watching anyway. What I will say is that Grant Wall segment has become, I think, one of the most significant blocks of soccer television that is out there, because between SI and Fox, they work very well together to use that segment to break news that oftentimes nobody else has. And it has become, you know, required tuning in, I think, for those of us who are in and around the game, whether fans, journalists, or whatever, because there's always something that is really, really breaking or significant. I think they've done a very good job with it.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of it, but it is very MLS-focused, though. And to me, it's not really focused on world soccer, or just soccer from around the globe.
To what extent has this been pushed by the fact that Taylor Twellman regularly breaks news for ESPN, be it on Twitter, be it breaking into ESPN shows, be it on ESPN FC? I mean, is this a reaction?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Oh, I mean, this was happening before Taylor really started moving into more of the reporting stuff. And Grant obviously has been breaking news for a long time. I think it maybe accelerated a little when Fox and Sports Illustrated struck a deal for something of a content partnership. What was that? I don't know, 8 months, a year or so ago. Maybe that accelerated a little bit. But Chris, Kardik, all the listeners know my biases towards the American game out there, so I don't mind. And if it sort of cross-pollinates people a little bit, I don't mind that. But, you know, if they were to call the first half hour the Fox Soccer Report, I wouldn't mind that. But then again, as I said, if they were to call the whole 45 minutes one show instead of two different shows, and then sort of spread out the Champions League talk in the beginning and the middle of the end, that might not be the worst thing either.
Yeah, I like the idea of bringing back the Fox Soccer Report nomenclature and applying that to everything, not just Champions League, but then also maybe Bundesliga pregame, FA Cup pregame, and whatever else Fox has, including FIFA events. I think I think a lot of us missed the Fox Soccer report, although we expect to hear some Canadian accents with it, of course, right? when we hear the Fox Soccer report right. name. But I think that that's a great idea because that would tie in more viewers, including myself, who may say, I don't want to see Bayern play Arsenal again. We see this matchup every year. It's predictable. Bayern always wins, et cetera. So I think that's good because Jonathan is right. I mean, there has been a lot of breaking news that Grant Wall breaks during this segment that isn't on SI already, that isn't on Twitter already, that he hasn't been beaten to by Jeff Carlisle or Taylor Twellman or whoever else might break that news. And it's become indispensable to find out what he's going to say. And it seems like every Champions League match day, he's breaking something. He's breaking some bit of news. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you guys, too. I mean, I think the Fox Soccer Report, that'd be a great name for the segment. And then, in some ways, maybe they'll bring in more viewers, maybe people that maybe are not interested in Champions League but just want to tune in and see what the latest news is before they do maybe, say, 15 minutes of pre-game coverage of whatever that Champions League day is.
Going to take a brief break here and to talk about buying tickets online. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to. And none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come a long way and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans like you to buy and sell tickets. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look for tickets for the Gold Cup that's just coming this summer to across the United States. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best deal possible. Also, SeatGeek does all of the work and saves you all the time and money. Also, SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners to the World Soccer Talk podcast get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's what you need to do. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Then enter the promo code WSTPOD. Again, the promo code is WSTPOD. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase.
So let's move on, guys, to segment two of the show, which is the TV streaming news. I'll kick it off. And the big news coming this week is that Liga MX games are now going to be available in English language on Facebook Live. And this is something we've spoken about actually for several weeks now on the show, just talking in terms of how well the TV numbers are doing, but the challenge of not having English language broadcasts. Well, I think Univision has listened, and they will be providing up to 46 games in 2017 in English language on Facebook Live. The first one is this weekend, El Superclásico between Chivas and America. And it's going to be commentated, at least this first one at least, is going to be by Nico Cantor, who is Andres Cantor's son, and also Ramses Sandoval. So both of those guys are going to be commentating the games. This is big news, guys.
Awesome.
Yeah, I just wonder what the numbers will be like in terms of how many people will tune in. I think it'll take time, but how big do you guys think this is?
Well, I think it's big on a few levels. One, let's step back for a minute and say Univision has tried to do a couple of English language Liga MX broadcasts over the years. They weren't always successful, in part because I think, as much as I know a lot of their talent, they were not always picking the right talent to do it. In Ramses Sandoval and Nico Cantor, they have two guys who know the English language broadcasting rhythm, which is different from the Spanish language broadcasting rhythm. There's no question about it. And they can do that, I think, and be successful at it. Ramses Sandoval does their English language MLS broadcasts. It was not always perfect, as we know, but it has gotten better. I think we can all agree with that.
Yep.
Nico Cantor, in addition to being Andres' son, is part of the radio shows that they do. He was part of their Copa America coverage, I think, as a sideline reporter. It's really neat for him
I should point out that I actually we hired him to do the Fort Lauderdale Strikers broadcast, and he did it for 2 years for us as the play-by-play guy, working with Juan Arango and with Dre Cordero at times, and guys we brought in from Gold TV. And so he got very – this was in 2011, and he gradually – and at first the thought was, oh, you just hired him because he's Andres Contreras' son. But he got better and better and better, to the point that he was really comfortable with the cadence that the audience, which was an English-language audience, granted a niche-limited audience that watches NASL games, but the cadence that they wanted – the type of calls they wanted, and very familiar with the league. So I think he's very good, and now we're 4 or 5 years on from that. So I'm very happy to see him get this opportunity.
Go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead.
The other question is the amount of viewers. Mm-hmm. And I would caution folks, we've got to be, all of us who work in the reporting business, especially those of us who write about the sports media and soccer on television, things like that. We have to be really careful in how we write about this. Because the number of people who are going to, quote unquote, watch these games, mm-hmm, is going to be high, because they are going to land right in the middle of people's Facebook feeds, whether they like it or not. And you're going to watch 5 seconds, and that's going to count.
Right.
See, now that Facebook is auto-playing videos with sound.
It's going to skew it for sure.
Right. And it's going to skew really high.
Right.
The metric that a lot of us use, both fortunately now the TV networks themselves, they didn't always, but they do now, and those of us who report on those numbers, is the average minute audience. That's the number to watch for, to see whether Univision reports it, whether Facebook reports it. That number is lower than the number of unique viewers, because a unique viewer can watch on one person can watch on multiple devices and be counted twice. And obviously it's a lot lower than the number of total minutes streamed. That's the number that I think is going to be really high, because it's going to get exposed to so many people, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this game too, in particular, I mean, what better game than to start it off with Chivas against America? But it should be interesting to see in terms of how this gets out there too, in terms of, you mean, people that may not be massive hardcore soccer fans, but may like casual, you mean, just trying to watch it and see what happens. A couple of things with this too is that, one is, I asked Univision whether there's any plans at some point to take the English language audio commentary and put that on SAP. At this time, there isn't any plans to do that, so it's Facebook Live all the way for the English language side. And the second thing, too, the way that the rights are set up in Mexico is it's on a club-by-club basis. And when I met with Univision a couple months ago, they said that they have been actively going to each individual club and trying to acquire the English language rights for those teams. So I don't think they have all of them. And that's probably why so far we haven't got the actual full schedule of which games it's going to be. But still, I mean, it's a great step forward, and it's a great test. I mean, it's a test to see how this will work at that level. We've seen Facebook Live being used in the past before, but this raises the bar to the next level. I mean, the most watched league in the United States, how is that going to transfer to Facebook Live in terms of, you know, people watching it there? We shall see.
Liga MX has to unify the broadcast rights. That is the next big step for them. There's a lot of conversation now about that going on in Mexico as well as in the United States, because I believe up here the rights are split three ways between Univision, Telemundo, and Azteca America.
Yeah.
You could still unify all of the rights and then have one package that is, I don't know, 60% of the games, one package that is 30, and one that is 10. And say you only get one. So whoever bids the most gets the 60, the second most gets the 30, and the third most gets the 10. But that's got to happen, because it's crazy what the way their rights are set up now. And they're just as split domestically as they are internationally.
Yeah.
Now here's the question you just said. This is a shot across the bow at a lot of enemies. None more so than Major League Soccer. And as good a product as MLS Live is, and from everything I've heard, it's going to be even better this year with multicasting options and things like that, At some point, MLS has to do this. They have to.
Right.
And they can take the step beyond what Univision is doing, where it's only going to be available in the United States. They can take theirs global probably a little more easily than Liga MX can.
Mm-hmm.
Get together with whether it's Facebook or Twitter, whatever it may be. I've said, remember when they did the split broadcast on Fox last fall with the NFL games?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
I said that day, do that again next year. You want to regionalize the broadcast, that's fine. They work with Fox so that all of the games are available to everybody online and do a deal with Twitter to distribute them.
Right. Yeah, I think the challenge, though, for Major League Soccer is I know they're pushing heavy into international rights, so Sky Sports and the markets, too. And you know, Jonathan, in terms of how well I think they've been surprised, pleasantly surprised, at how well it's done overseas. So even if it's U.S. for the beginning in terms of at least kind of making more games available through Facebook Live and seeing kind of maybe learning some of the lessons from Liga MX and Univision, what they do well and where's the kind of areas for improvement, I think at least if we get some of those games on Facebook Live, I think that's going to help. At the same time, I think Kartik, I think you mentioned offline that you're working on an article about which leagues in the U.S., soccer leagues, are the most accessible. This changes if a Liga MX, in terms of especially the English language side, if MLS was able to do that, or even just to test it, with MLS Live, that does kind of throw a spanner in the works. But even if they were able to test it for some specific games and start to see how well it does.
Yeah. No, this is potentially a game changer. And I agree with Jonathan. This is maybe a wake up call to Major League Soccer, because we've heard rumors. We've talked for now 2 or 3 years, I want to say maybe actually 3 or 4 years, about them partnering with some sort of distributor online for streaming rights that would be much more accessible than MLS Live.
They have it. That last year was what, the second year of the 8-year deal, right?
Right.
ESPN owns all of the out-of-market streaming rights for MLS. They technically give the green light to run MLS Live. And they could, if they wanted to, put all the games on ESPN3, which I've been yelling for years that they should do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes impolitely, sometimes more politely. I've said for a long time that they should do that. I understand why they don't, especially in an era when people are cutting the cord. And I do believe that even now, for the $80 or whatever it is, it's still, in my mind, a better value in a lot of ways than some of the NBA and the NHL and the baseball and the NBA all cost a lot more. I still think MLS Live is a very good value. They've raised the price a little bit, but they've also got two more teams this year, so there's going to be a lot more games in it. But I still think the ideal is to put it all on ESPN3, the way ESPN does with college conferences and things like that, and let it be available without a paywall, because you will so dramatically expand the audience that way, especially the casual fan who is looking for something to watch on a Saturday night and decides to pick the MLS game because they've heard Michael Bradley's playing or whatever it may be. That's what I do. I know they're hesitant, and I think they might have thought they had a little more time to wait. Now with what Liga MX is doing, maybe that'll put the spur under them and they'll move a little quicker.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting thing to watch in terms of what happens and to see the impact of it, because it could have some big ramifications. And it's interesting, too, that YouTube's not in this equation. I think maybe 5 years ago, YouTube would have been a part of this discussion where we say, okay, well, maybe they'll do YouTube Live and stream a game there. Of course, games are streamed still live there from USL.
USL.
Exactly. But yeah, it's big news. So I think we'll be talking about this in additional weeks on the podcast and kind of seeing in terms of any well, not numbers, but in terms of feedback and what people have been seeing watching these games on Facebook Live and what the experience is like. So I think that's one to keep an eye out for. Kartik, any other news from the world of TV streaming news out there?
Yeah, so BN Sports, not surprisingly, but maybe disappointingly to a lot of our listeners, will be airing the Panama-US World Cup qualifier in March. They have gotten the rights to that. We don't know how they acquired the rights. Maybe it was from Traffic Sports, which has been the case in the past, or not. But once again, I'm sure when that final week of March comes up and the World Cup qualifying of international break, we're going to have a litany of complaints from fans about a U.S. qualifier, and in this case, a really, really critical qualifier. First away match for Bruce Arena being on BN and not being on ESPN or Fox. And it's a problem that I think it would be nice if CONCACAF found some way to unify rights the way UEFA has. They're well behind on that. So it's something we're just going to have to deal with this cycle for both U.S. and Mexico fans who are forced to watch BN for their nation's away matches in World Cup qualifying.
Well, not quite. First of all, I believe this is a continuation of the same contract from the 2014 rights cycle on the English side.
So it's traffic.
It's the same deal, even though traffic doesn't exist anymore. I don't know what the deal will be for 2022. I have no idea. It is worth remembering that on the Spanish language side, Telemundo has the rights to every, I believe that in Spanish on Telemundo and in English on BN, they have the rights to every World Cup qualifier game played in every country except Mexico, the U.S., and Canada. Had Canada made the hex or drawn the U.S. in the first stage, I don't know. I mean, Univision had a Spanish language deal for Canada's home games because they wanted the rights to Canada, Mexico, and Vancouver, and that's how they got them. I don't know what an English language deal for a U.S.-Canada game would have looked like. I'm sure, now look, maybe the CSA would have been petty and said, screw you, and gone a deal with BN, but I sort of doubt it. But it's BN in English, NBC Networks in Spanish, and Telemundo has for many years had all of Mexico's road games in Spanish. The English rights eventually came available. BN took them. I am with you 100%, Kardik, that this has to be an important order of business on Victor Montagliani's plate as the president of CONCACAF to convince all of the small nations that it is in their financial interest to unify the rights. The burden then comes along on ESPN, Fox, Univision, Telemundo, and maybe Bell in Canada or Sportsnet if you want to throw them in, to put the money on the table that makes it worth their while. And from the conversations that I have had over the years, especially the U.S. networks, are ready to do that. And I know that Victor Montagliani has other things on his plate right now, like rigging the game for 2026 bidding so that Canada can get there without having to qualify for it. Excuse me, I shouldn't have said that. I do think this is something that needs to get done for the 2022 rights cycle, and that it is in CONCACAF's interest. I think all three of us probably agree on that.
Yeah, from the official U.S. soccer perspective, I mean, from the U.S. soccer website, so right now it says BN Sports for that game, for the Panama game. It doesn't list the Spanish language broadcaster, but hopefully it's NBC Universo or Telemundo for that
I
one.
I think firm that it will be. But look, U.S. soccer, as they've said many times over the years, because IMG, what it used to be, Soccer United Marketing after a while, they don't buy those rights anymore. They're out of that game. Mm-hmm. So they are, when they say we can't do anything about it, they're right.
Right. I think the other thing that, Carter, going back to the point that you had was, everyone complains, I think, when games are on BN Sports. They're in 24 million homes these days. Out of all of the soccer networks or sports networks out there, they probably have the best distribution in terms of at least online streaming legal ways. Practically, I think almost every single streaming solution service has them as an option, and there's plenty of free trials to go around to from Sling or to Fubo to and other broadcasters too. So there are ways to watch these games, definitely. So I'm sure worldsoccertalk.com will kind of have the TV listings and the actual streaming listings to help make sure. But at the end of the day, the game on the Friday, March 24th, is USA against Honduras. That's on FS1 and Univision. And then the Tuesday game then on March 28th is on BN Sports and more likely probably NBC Universo and or Telemundo. So there's ways of watching it, definitely. But but still interesting news to share indeed. And in terms of some other news that's out there too, DirecTV Now is going to be adding the NBC Sports app to subscribers beginning today, which is Thursday. DirecTV Now subscribers will be able to authenticate via the NBC Sports app to watch all of the programming, including Premier League matches. So for so people that have DirecTV Now, that's in terms of streaming, that's definitely big news there too.
Is it required that you have to have a DirecTV subscription to get DirecTV Now? Because it used to be.
Not anymore. So it's completely separate. So even though it's still owned by AT&T, so you can be... Yeah, so it's completely separate. So if you wanted to just have DirecTV Now as a separate streaming solution service, you don't have to have DirecTV, the actual satellite service. So completely separate, separate product. And you can have both if you want to. but no, you can have it separate and nothing tied to satellite. So that's something to check out. And then, Jonathan, I'm not sure if you had a chance to look. I'm sure you have, knowing you. But have you had a chance to dive into Yes's big news in terms of the NYCFC, the TV deal that they announced recently in terms of the coverage that they'll be providing to New York City FC fans?
Well, the interesting bit to me is that they picked up a couple of preseason games for the year, which is nice. They're also tape delaying a few, as they do every year. I wish they wouldn't. I know their fan base wishes they wouldn't. Obviously, they are Yankees first, you know, now forever, as I understand that. But I just keep wondering, you know, they put 20 or 30 or whatever it is, Yankees games on WPIX or on some, you know, over-the-air affiliate in New York every year. I just wonder whether they might try to do that once or twice with an NYCFC game one of these days, just to see what happens. You know, enough people have access to Fox Sports Go, although I should say that Cablevision being what it is in New York, I shouldn't go speaking for everybody. You know, tape delaying, I never like it. I always think MLS should be past it. I don't think you're ever going to see MSG Network or Sportsnet New York, you know, have NYCFC ride, certainly for as long as the Yankees have an equity stake. As I said, I just wish they'd work with, you know, an over-the-air broadcast partner for one or two games a year just to see how it does. You know, the Philadelphia Union do that with the ABC affiliate in Philly. DC United does it with WJLA, the ABC affiliate down there. Who knows? If nobody watches it, okay, fine. Nobody watches it, you don't have to do it again. But give it a shot, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think again, these are smaller markets, but I think Salt Lake, for example, was a huge deal in Salt Lake's evolution to becoming really a mainstream sporting property in Utah to get on an over-the-air affiliate. And I've seen that play out on a couple of smaller MLS markets. I'd love to see it happen in New York, and especially with the footprint NYCFC has put already, even if it's just one or two games a year. Just having something over the air on network television in New York City.
Well, and the other reason why this comes into play is that Yes Network doesn't have a secondary channel the way that, you know, the Comcast
MSG does. Yeah, you're right.
So that's you know, maybe that's
that was always a thing with Red Bull. When Red Bull would get bumped to MSG2, it would be, oh, gosh, you're being bumped to MSG2, but at least the game was on still. And with YES, you don't have that.
Right.
So that is a massive disadvantage.
So speaking of YES, or YES, that's one of the channels that's on Fubo Premier, which is the brand new product from Fubo TV. So I've gone ahead and put together a video, kind of a first impressions video, as well as a comparison guide, as well as kind of some detailed articles that go into exactly everything that they offer. But essentially, there's two different packages, Fubo Premier, which is $34.99 a month, and there's also Fubo Latino, that's $14.99 a month. Each of the packages has different options. The Fubo Premier one has FS1, FS2, Fox Soccer Plus, the Fox Sports Regionals, Comcast Sports Network, which is a big one in terms of some of the markets in the U.S., as well
including,
as... Go ahead.
Including mine, because Comcast has refused for years to do a deal with Dish Network and DirecTV, but now they're letting their Philly regional network, which has almost forever been only on Comcast and maybe one or two other small outlets. When they put it on Fubo, it was a huge deal up here because now people can watch the local games up here without a cable subscription.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a great thing about Fubo. You don't need a cable or satellite subscription. You also get NBCSN, CNBC, USA, and then in select cities. So in those cities where Fox owns the local affiliate, you'll get the local Fox channel. And in those cities where NBC owns the local affiliate, you'll get those channels too. So what you do is enter your new zip code, and then it'll look and see where you are. So if you're in Philadelphia, you would get the CSN as well as any of the local channels in that area, in addition to everything else. So one other piece of news to share is that Fubo has changed the free trial. So it used to be 24 hours, and as of last night, they changed it to 7 days. So you get a chance to kind of basically dive right in and watch 7 days of free soccer, as well as news, entertainment, movie channels, etc., and to see if that's a package that you might be interested in. Kartik, over to you, and some news from Manchester.
Yeah, so Manchester United TV, we love these club channels, don't we? Manchester United TV has, of course, their app. And on their app, you can get full access now to Match Day Live, Reserve and Academy fixtures, which big club fans do geek out on. And Jose Mourinho's press conferences, the exclusive interviews, some documentaries about the club, and more. It's a full 24/7 stream. It's available for a one-month free trial on iOS and Android. I like some of the features that club channels are putting out, documentaries behind the scenes. I watch the Borussia Dortmund television a lot on Fubo, actually. And since we were just speaking of Fubo, I like the sorts of features they put out, and same thing with Man City TV, et cetera. The question is, will there be enough subscribers to this? Because you can get so much Manchester United content for free, but will fans be interested in the academy fixtures and the live reserve team fixtures? I think that's probably what would drive the interest. Manchester United doesn't have a high-level women's team like Manchester City, Chelsea, and Arsenal do, and Liverpool do, to drive interest on that end. And we're going to get more into that a little later in the show, the whole advent of big women's clubs in England.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal for Man United supporters. I mean, it's been a long time where we haven't been able to get MUTV in the US. I think many, many years ago, I think we used to have it. I don't know if it was on Fox Sports or...
Yes, wasn't it? It actually was on YES.
Yeah, that's right, when they did the deal. That's right.
When the devil, when the two devils on the two sides of the Atlantic got together.
Yeah, right.
How times have changed. But yeah, that's right. They did have that. So, but for MUTV, in terms of club channels, I haven't watched a lot of it, but I know Steve Bauer does a lot of work for them. But they, Paddy Currant and others have done a lot of work for MUTV. So as far as club TV channels go, that's kind of at the higher end of kind of the better ones that they do. So for fans globally having to be able to access that through an app, I think that's good. That's good news. And then the last piece of news for this week, and this might be a non-story or it might be a story, but basically what's happened this past week is that Liverpool Football Club has banned the Sun newspaper from Anfield. Not just from Anfield, but also from Melwood, the training ground, as well as preventing access for any of the Sun reporters, preventing them accessing for interviews, etc., the managers or players. Now, why is this big news for, or maybe not so much big news from the TV perspective? Well, that's because Neil Ashton, who's the reporter for NBCSN, does a lot of kind of in the papers and kind of news from the grounds in England. Neil Ashton is the chief football reporter for The Sun. And I noticed on Twitter, I think last week, somebody asked him for a comment in regards to this news, and he said pretty much, I want to keep my opinions to myself. Now, how does this impact his work for NBCSN? I put a request in for a comment from NBC Sports regarding his role and whether his position at The Sun is going to limit his access for NBCSN at all or not at all. I would imagine it wouldn't, but you never know. So I put the message in, and NBC Sports said they'll get back to me in terms of getting clarification if this does impact his role, if he is at Anfield and he wants to be able to report for NBCSN. Hopefully it won't impact it, but still interesting enough. Okay, so let's move on to TV ratings, and we're going to fly through this one. So basically, there's some of the big numbers from the weekend. There was 1.37 million people who watched Liga MX on Saturday on Univision, and that game was between Club America and Puebla. Again, big numbers from Liga MX. Liverpool against Spurs had 951,000 viewers on NBC for that Saturday midday broadcast. We've been looking at the Bundesliga the last few weeks in terms of how it's doing against the Championship on Friday evenings. 24,000 for the Bundesliga game on Friday on FS2 between Mainz and Augsburg. And the Championship so far is averaging about 16,000 viewers on beIN Sports. On Saturday, the Ingolstadt against Bayern game got 50,000 viewers on FS1, while Bayer Leverkusen got 13,000 viewers on FS2. For those, actually, I don't have the Fox Deportes numbers. I'm sure those are much higher. For Hull against Arsenal, maybe Arsenal fans are kind of thinking that it's over for Wenger or Arsenal's chances of the title. Reason beIN is that only 279,000 people watched Hull against Arsenal on Saturday morning on NBCSN, which by Arsenal standards is definitely lower than usual.
I can jump in on that one.
Sure, yeah.
As somebody who, as folks know, watches a lot of Arsenal games, to put it one way, I've slept through the last two because the 7:30 in the morning game is just not worth waking up for, especially when they're playing. I have not watched an Arsenal-Chelsea game now for a couple of years, in part because they're at 7:30 in the morning, and in part because I know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And in that Hull game, I mean, Hull City deserved a point in that game. I mean, Arsenal was extremely lucky.
Yeah, Hull City
lucky.
Played very well.
Yeah, and Hull is, yeah. So it just goes to show.
So here's my thing about this, and Chris, you might find this interesting. There have been a lot of really good games at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday, which is the worst possible time. And I don't just mean, good games, but the big teams, mm-hmm. That 7:30 in the morning Eastern time kickoff. Now, obviously, it's the domestic benefit, security-wise and traveling fans-wise and all that, for it to be at 12:30 British time, kickoff. Mm-hmm. But it's also I've noticed there haven't been a lot of really great games in that 12:30 Eastern slot.
Right.
And I wonder if that is a sign, since that is nominally NBC's marquee time slot, when they put the games on their broadcast network and stuff. I wonder if that hints that the Asian broadcasters still have a little more clout here because 7:30 a.m. Eastern is prime time over in Asia.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I know that La Liga especially and the Bundesliga have been making a big push into Asia. And La Liga, even with the El Clasico, changing the time of the kickoff to be right, what was it, 10:15 in the morning. So that was done exclusively, really, really for the Asia market. Same thing for the Premier League, too. I mean, they're looking at that 7:30 broadcast on Eastern time in the U.S. They're not caring as much about that, but it is then prime time in China and in Asia. So absolutely, 100% of the way, they're definitely doing it from a TV perspective for Asia, trying to figure out, okay, what games can we put in those time slots that are going to be kind of interest to that continent. And for us on the East Coast, for us on the Pacific Coast, that makes it even tougher. And then 12:30 games. We've had some pretty big ones, but not as big as kind of the 11 o'clock on a Sunday Eastern time, or oftentimes kind of on that 7:30 Eastern time on a Saturday morning. So makes it tough for us.
The viewership record is still, what, 3 years old now?
Yeah, well, there was one that... So the game that was, which one was it? The Manchester United, where they did the, was it Manchester United against Liverpool, where they had the second half on NBC?
Yeah, on NBC. Yeah.
So that one, in isolation, if you take that, just the second half of that game, that was bigger than the one from 3 years ago, which was the Liverpool against Chelsea game. But I guess once they averaged the numbers together with the NBCSN one, which was the full 90 minutes versus the 45 minutes, it dropped it down to, I think, 1.1 million or something like that. So technically, officially, it is the one from the Chelsea-Liverpool from 3 years ago, I think it is.
Chelsea United.
It depends. It depends. If you look at the one, so the Chelsea against Liverpool was on tape delay, which is on Fox. Actually, that might be 5 years ago now. But the Man United one from 3 years ago was live. So that one would have been the biggest live number, which is always the number that NBC always pushes out there. And then I sometimes remind people the Fox number that was on tape delay from 5 or 6 years ago, that was, I think, 1.4 million, I think it was, at the time. But,
I found the numbers. In theory, at least, the record is November 22nd, 2014, Man United Arsenal on NBC, 1.41 million. That Chelsea-Man United game, according to NBC's numbers, was 1.38. Mm-hmm. Not a big difference, obviously. Right. I just find it interesting that it's now been, you know, 2.5 years or whatever it is, and they haven't broken their own record yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is in terms of like you talked about before, about in terms of scheduling, where there's been opportunities where they could have kind of even put some of those games on that 12, say a Liverpool against Man United, put that on a Saturday at 12:30 NBC broadcast, and kind of. Or whichever game it would be, but oftentimes those games are being kind of that 11 o'clock on a Sunday, which means it's NBCSN, or it's been the 7:30 game, or the Monday game. There's been a lot of Monday games, actually, some of the bigger games. We've had, like, 0-0 ties between Liverpool and Man United and stuff like that. But, yeah, I think part of it is the scheduling point of view in terms of, not playing favorably to the U.S. market in terms of trying to get the best number. But it has been a while. It has been a while, that's for sure. So moving on to our next segment, and that's Listener Mailbag. We've got one question from one of our listeners. This one, Jonathan's probably a good one for you. It's from Gillian Avalon, and she sent this in through email. She says, "Here's my problem with Fox Sports. I live in a cable region where FS2 is not offered. It's not a question of buying a bigger package. I looked into that extensively. It's just not available in my region or television market. So when I look at what's offered on their app, and it teases me by showing things I want, I'll check the channel and it'll say FS2, which I have no way of viewing, short of perhaps paying for some extra Fox streaming package, perhaps, which I'm not prepared to do at this point. They were often losing me to NBC for Premier League coverage anyway, but on the few occasions I try to watch German football, the one I really want to watch is on a station I can't access. Why does cable and Fox do this to me? What's the purpose of having a whole station not available in an area, even if people are willing to pay for it on cable plans? Do we know what markets this actually is available on? This may sound strange, but as I'm planning to look for a new job in a new town in the next couple of years, I sort of want to move to a market where I can make the most of my options if it's otherwise practical. I'm under the impression that I could get it in Virginia." So, Jonathan, what's your thoughts on this one?
I got a lot of them. I'm going to guess, I don't know if Jillian, if you're out there and you're on Twitter, you can contact me on Twitter at the goalkeeper and we'll talk there. Fox Sports 2, as of November of last year, I haven't seen new ones since then, but maybe there have been and I'm just missing them. Fox Sports 2, as of November of last year, was in 50.8 million homes. That is more homes than Univision Deportes. And almost as many homes as NBA TV. So, look, the biggest culprit here by some distance is Comcast. They're the only major cable provider in the country, or satellite provider in the country at this point, that does not widely distribute Fox Sports 2. And I have asked them and Fox many times, would you do a, you know, sort of a mid-contract deal to fix that? And they've always told me, no, the way this thing works is we're going to do it when the cable carriage deal comes up, which I believe, as I said earlier, is sometime within the next 12 months or so, maybe 18 months. It's been a while since I last heard, so my math might not be entirely right. But that's when they're going to do it. And hopefully at that point, that is when they will do it. Comcast is not going to budge unless they are convinced that there is a lot of – before then, unless they are convinced that there is a lot of demand out there. Well, how do you convince them that there is a lot of demand? Tweeting at the three of us is not going to solve the problem, is it? And Kartik, especially you and me, and Chris too, they've done that plenty. But we aren't. We don't work for Comcast, and we don't work for Fox, so we can't fix the problem. Why does Fox do this to me? Question goes back to the fact that originally Fox Sports 2 was a channel called Fuel TV, and Fox Sports 1 was a channel called Speed Network. And when they flipped them over to what they are now, instead of starting them from scratch, they used their existing channels. Right. Which was the worst idea. Some providers then picked up Fox Sports 2. Comcast said, we are not going to add any more homes of Fox Sports 2 out of the gate. And I complained about that rather loudly at the time, and they insisted, and they being Comcast had the upper hand, and so that's what they did. As I said, hopefully during the next negotiation that will fix it, what I would say is if you get to a place where you can get DirecTV or Dish Network, I would do that. That would solve your problem. It would also get you beIN Sports in high definition, which Comcast does not currently offer. Beyond that, this is something that when you first sent me this, Chris, the very first thing I thought of was the following. This is a conversation that you and I have had many times. Yes, you can pay extra for some Fox streaming package. I'm one of the people who does. I think a fair few folks out there quite like Fox Soccer to go because you get every Champions League, Bundesliga, and a bunch of other games too. Mm-hmm. But when the people say to you and me, well, I get all the Premier League games for NBC free of charge. No, you don't. You're still paying your cable or satellite bill.
Right.
You don't have to pay any extra for them. Mm-hmm. But if you're a cord cutter, you can get all the Fox Soccer to go stuff without having a cable subscription. And you can now with the Premier League stuff, although you couldn't for a good while. Mm-hmm. But it is another opportunity for us to remind folks, you know, I'm not going to tell people how to spend their money. I happen to like Fox Soccer to go. Doesn't mean anybody else has to go to the trouble of paying for it if they don't want to. But anybody who says to me, I get all the Premier League games free of charge, I remind them, no, you don't.
Yeah, the challenging thing with this one too is it's regional Comcast. So for example, my Comcast here locally, I get FS2, and I get beIN Sports, and I get beIN Sports in HD. But that's my South Florida regional Comcast, basically branch.
Well, that's random because there are people who have Xfinity who are close by to you, Chris, who don't get beIN Sports in HD and get it just in standard definition and don't get FS2. So, mm-hmm. And I get this question as Jonathan references maybe once a week. It's frequent.
Oh yeah,
and so it's very random even within the Comcast family.
Yeah, and it's on a regional basis. It's kind of which makes it even more complicated in terms of instead of a nationwide rollout, it's a kind of a regional contracts or agreements. I mean, the other thing too that I don't think we've mentioned yet is that is Comcast is owned by NBC Universal. So NBC's in competition with Fox Sports, and in terms of leverage or just in the back of their mind, I'm sure that's something that comes up in terms of, okay, well, if we do roll out FS2 nationwide to Comcast, how is that going to impact our TV viewing numbers or advertising dollars at the end of the day?
I don't think it will, and I think they know that ultimately because when the Comcast NBC Universal merger happened, the FCC barred Comcast from treating NBC channels with special preference, mm-hmm. and barred the NBC side of things from treating Comcast with any special preference as a cable provider.
Right.
You would think, and I've said this with the Olympics, when Comcast didn't carry some of the NBC linear Olympics channels but put them all on the X1 streaming instead, I said, you would think that Comcast would want to be the poster child in the classroom. They decided to not be. But the funny thing is, from what I've heard, the bigger fight is not between Comcast and Fox, because Fox is too big, mm-hmm. for Comcast to want to cross. From what I have heard, and I know some people in the industry who've told me this over the years, where Comcast really sort of furtively throws its weight around and tries to get away with it is carriage of Univision channels, because they're trying to protect Telemundo and other Spanish language channels that maybe don't have Univision's clout. Mm-hmm. But with Fox, you know, I think Comcast and Fox look at each other and say, okay, we're both big enough that, you know, we're going to settle this through a through a new carriage deal at some point, and they can't, you know, they can't throw stones or have a food fight or whatever.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting too, and Jonathan, you bring this up too, is in terms of, okay, so I'm a local Comcast subscriber here, and I know that NBC Sports has been kind of frustrated by the lack of rollout of Premier League Extra Time on Comcast regional. So I can't get Premier League Extra Time even though I got Comcast, and Comcast is owned by the parent company, NBC Universal. So that does go back to in terms of, NBC, well, Comcast is not getting any favorable treatment from NBC. And yeah, that's a good point in terms of, the relationship with Fox.
And that was the merger imposed by the Federal Communications Commission. Mm-hmm. It's not permanent. It's going to expire at some point. I don't know when, but that's, you and I think we were both in Stamford, right? The first day NBC did Premier League coverage.
We were there actually, I think a couple weeks later.
We were there
later.
2 weeks later. Yeah.
I was there the very first day. And I was sitting next to John Miller, who's the president of the NBC Sports Group, was in charge of the whole soccer thing and getting that deal done and making sure it was rolling out properly. I'm sitting there, in one of the green rooms or whatever, watching all the monitors, watching on Twitter to see how fans were reacting. Mm-hmm. And someone saying, I can't get the whatever the feeds were back at the time, through the box, the extra time ones, the way that Comcast did it very weirdly, where you had to dig through your cable box and they weren't really TV channels. They were some oddly shaped thing that was through the internet jack or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but you couldn't watch them as TV channels. You couldn't join it live. It was like watching an on-demand movie or whatever it was. You had to join it from the start.
Yep.
And John Miller walks over to me and says, what are your readers saying? Because he was genuinely interested, which I appreciated. And I said, here's what they're complaining about. They can't watch the extra time games, through the directions that they've been given. Mm-hmm. He walks out in the hall. I think I can tell this story, by the way. I'm not sure I have before, but the statute of limitations has probably expired on it, so I'm going to tell it. He walks out into the hallway, gets somebody up on his phone, and starts complaining to them. I later found out that person was Mark Lazarus, who was on the Comcast side of things, and Miller had told him to fix it.
Right.
Well, they haven't fixed it yet. Now, with the X1 box, it's a little easier because everything is sort of blended together, and they can get you with two clicks from the linear television channel to the online stream.
Right.
That's the ideal. That's fine. But for a while, it wasn't perfect, and neither of those two sides could force each other to fix it.
And that's the thing, going back to Jillian's question too, in terms of what should she do. I mean, from my perspective, I think the best opportunity we have is kind of whether it's the DirecTV Nows or the PlayStation Views or basically the Fubos of the world or Sling TVs of the world, because it cuts out a lot of that crap. So basically, other than local TV stations, which you can still get on your indoor antenna for free, you can access pretty much everything in terms of Fox Soccer to Go also, as well as FS1, FS2. I mean, you go down the list, it's almost every single thing. Each package or each service is a little bit different, so you kind of have to look at each one and cherry-pick the one that's the best fit for you based on what you want to watch. But it does cut out the crap in terms of having to deal with all the kind of basically political, well, not even political, but business negotiations outside that you have no control over. Kind of, the FS2 availability as one question, or Fox Soccer to Go, wanting to have everything. There are options out there. You just kind of have to take a look and see which one's the best fit for you. It is complicated, and that's the thing, and that's why we have this podcast too, is to answer a lot of the questions and discuss it. And again, I think it comes down to what do you like to watch, and then trying to find what's the best, either cable, satellite, or streaming package. But the good thing is there's more choices available, and I think as each month goes by, the amount of features and technology, it's getting better and better. So I think we're getting there, and we're not quite there yet in terms of kind of one solution that's going to give us everything, but we're pretty close. Now, so for listeners who do have any questions or feedback or comments about anything we've said on the show, or if you have questions about your local cable company, you want to know why can't I watch XYZ channel, you can email us at web@willsoccertalk.com. hit us up on Twitter at WSoccerTalk or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk. In the last segment, the feature topic of the week, and Kartik and Jonathan, I'm probably going to hand this over to you guys since you're the experts on this one. But there's been some big recent signings. They're making the Football Association Women's Soccer League and the UEFA Women's Champions League on TV, more of an interesting property, perhaps for television or streaming in the US with Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and others, a lot of kind of US stars moving overseas to play in some of these leagues and competitions. What does that mean for television or streaming? What do you guys think in terms of opportunities to perhaps to watch some of those games for us in the US to want to watch these competitions? And you mean, do you think it's going to happen anytime soon?
Well, I've started making some calls on that to people who I know at Fox, at NBC, and so on. As I understand it, the UEFA Women's Champions League is not part of Fox's current rights deal. I believe the women's final has been on Gold TV the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how it got there. I get the sense that Fox might be interested in doing something. I don't know what it would take for them to get a deal done. I would imagine it wouldn't take very much money. But even if they just put the games on Fox Soccer to Go or Fox Sports Go and said, here they are, the core audience that wants to watch them can go watch them that way, I think that would probably be enough. As for, because the, sorry, my mic cut out there for a second. I'm looking up the FA Women's Super League schedule real quick. The thing about the Champions League is you've got Carly Lloyd at Man City, Alex Morgan at Lyon. People are probably only really going to be interested in those, in the Lyon and Man City games on a wide scale. I mean, some of us would watch more of them, but, you know, for the most part, it's going to be three or four or five games or whatever it is over time. Mm-hmm. A really interesting question becomes the FA Women's Super League and what happens when, for example, right out of the gate on April 23rd, Man City plays Chelsea. And I think it would be safe to assume, we know, obviously, but you'd think that Carly Lloyd will be playing for Man City and Crystal Dunn will be playing for Chelsea. And you'd think that somebody in the UK would do a television production of that game in some form, which might then, and you know, NBC, through its relations with the Premier League, might be able to pick up again, even if it's only a digital offering. I think it would get a bit of an audience. But I, you know, my friends who work over there and who cover the FA Women's League have said, now you have this increased exposure. Now is the time to deliver broadcast coverage of more of the games, not just, you know, one or whatever it is a week. And I am reminded, and you two know this better than almost anybody else, we still can't watch every FA Cup game, mm-hmm. which in this day and age is absurd. And so I shot back to one of my colleagues across the pond, Kieran Thieveham of Equalizer Soccer. Well, you know, they still haven't gotten all the FA Cup games. Once they do that, hopefully the Women's League won't be too far behind.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing, too, with the FA Cup is that I think there's a new TV rights deal coming up soon in terms of, I think, from IMG. They bought the global rights, and then they're reselling that in each different kind of region and probably to Fox Sports in the U.S., or at least the kind of the favorite. But that is the thing, though, too. I think one of the big questions for me, too, is in terms of the Women's Super League in the UK is I don't think there's a TV rights holder in the UK. I know some of the games have been on, I think, BBC Radio 5 Live. They've had some radio broadcasts of those games. Kartik, have you seen anything in terms of Man City, whether it's a through their YouTube channel, MCFC TV, in terms of anything
They clip highlights pretty quickly, and I have been able to keep up with Man City's women's team pretty aggressively and pretty frequently via that. But I have not seen a live game yet. The highlights come out quickly. They're clipped through MCFC TV, and it's a particular interest to England national team fans because Izzy Christensen, Jill Scott, Steph Houghton, Karen Bardsley, they all play for Manchester City. And obviously now for U.S. fans with Carly Lloyd going over, it's going to be a channel that I think a lot of people subscribe to, but I have not seen a live game yet, including on the final match day, Well, actually, each of the last two seasons, Manchester City wins the title this past year on the final match day. The previous year, it was contingent on if Chelsea had lost, which they didn't, and Chelsea won the title. But it would have been nice to have some sort of live legal way to watch those.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, one thing that it reminds me of, too, is I think with NBC, I think there was a couple of Mondays where last season where they had the Premier League. Was it the U23 or U21 games? And they had, I think, Tottenham Hotspur on a Monday. They showed against, it might have been against Chelsea. But I'm wondering whether or not they'll be kind of maybe, so for some of these games like Man City against Chelsea or some of these Champions League games, maybe even Lyon as one example, whether there'll be kind of sporadic availability and whether the clubs themselves can actually help push this through and make an agreement with the FA or UEFA. To be able to broadcast these from a club perspective?
I think the Women's Champions League games are produced for broadcast.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of Fox or somebody taking them. Right. The FA Super League is the big question. And for the reference of you guys and for all the listeners out there, the first big one, April 23rd, is the opening day, in fact, it's the opening weekend of the FA Women's Super League season. April 23rd, 11 a.m. Eastern time, Man City, Chelsea, that's Carly Lloyd and Crystal Dunn. And then Chelsea play Arsenal on May 17th. That's Crystal Dunn and Heather O'Reilly. And then here it is. Man City, Arsenal, which is Carly Lloyd and Heather O'Reilly, is May 28th. They're playing a short season this time around because they're flipping to a fall to spring schedule the way the men play. So they're playing this sort of shortened 3-month campaign, which was part of the attraction for Carly Lloyd to go and sign over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is one to watch, keep an eye out for too, because I think a lot of us hardcore soccer fans or fans of women's soccer definitely do want to watch these games and see these players in action. And it's new ground. I mean, hopefully Fox or GoTV or being sports, so I mean the long list. Hopefully, one of these broadcasters can step up.
It's also a lot of fans of the men's clubs of Chelsea fans, Man City fans, and Arsenal fans. Those three in particular, and it's ironic. Those are the three clubs that have signed U.S. national team players, or in Heather O'Reilly's case, a former national team player, but still a very popular, very accomplished player, world champion, and a multi-time Olympic gold medalist. That's a driver. The fans of the men's clubs following the women's clubs. I cannot tell you how many of the Man City fans I know in Europe, whether they be in England itself or in Scandinavia, that watch the women's team and keep track of the women's team and had really no interest in women's football before Manchester City started this women's club. So I think that's a driver, and we're finding that stateside too. I mean, I think Portland is an exceptional case, right? But I've noticed in Houston and Orlando, and I think it's going to happen now in North Carolina when LAFC launches their NWSL club, when Real Salt Lake potentially launches their NWSL club and others, that's a driver of interest. So I think it's almost a fait accompli. These games somehow become accessible on television. Otherwise, people will find ways to illegally stream them, as we saw with the men's game for so long.
Right. And they have their big new deal now. The NWSL does with A&E Networks and Lifetime, where they're going to take over all the live streaming. The word is, it's still going to be free of charge and globally accessible. We'll see if they live up to it. Now, Cardick, here's one for you. I wonder if Carly Lloyd's foray to Manchester is successful, given that City Football Group already has a foot on the ground over here in the form of New York City FC, whether they start talking to the NWSL about running a women's team in the New York area.
Absolutely. I think they will, because as I said just a moment ago, you know, Jonathan, you're well aware of this also, Real Salt Lake and LAFC, those two groups in particular, those two ownership groups in particular, are already talking.
And Vancouver.
Jeff Plush, and Vancouver, right. And Jeff Mallon in Vancouver, who had an interest in WPS, remember, helped fund the start of WPS, the previous women's professional league here in the United States. Those three MLS teams are talking to Jeff Plush. They're talking to Amanda Duffy and NWSL about setting up shop. I think NYCFC would be next. And Manchester City has put a lot of resources and a lot of effort into promoting their women's team. So I think it's just it's happening inevitably. And there was a lot of resistance, Jonathan, you know this, in the women's game here in the United States for years to hitching the professional teams to the men's professional teams, to MLS clubs. There was it was almost a passé subject when you would bring it up. Well, why not elevate the Seattle Sounders women or DC United women to WPS back at when WPS was around? Now, I think there's a realization based on what's happened in Europe that's the way forward for the women's game. And as time goes on, and this is a whole nother subject for another time, but NWSL has two very clear camps of teams aligned with men's teams and teams that are not, that are kind of WPS holdover / NWSL 1.0 teams that might eventually be relocated as Western New York was to North Carolina to attach it to an NASL team, or just kind of fade away and replaced by stronger clubs in those markets. Sky Blue is one of those that comes to mind, and I could see CFC doing it.
And of all the team names on this earth, they could be bought by Manchester City.
Right. That's a great point.
The heat's going to be on them. Look, if there's even a hint of Manchester City being interested in potentially doing this at some point, and I wouldn't say that I'm putting a hint out there, but I don't think it's going to be long before somebody does. It's going to put the heat on Sky Blue in a big way. And I think it might also, by the way, help give City Football Group a little bit more political capital in trying to get a stadium built somewhere in New York.
Right. Yeah. That's a whole extra dimension to it in terms of making that happen. I think that's one thing. I mean, just to close this segment on is that I think there's a close connection or closer connection between the soccer fan and his or her club. So no matter what club it is, say Man City as one example. And I think a lot of it is in terms of social media and the web, as well as video, in terms of all the amount of information you get on a club social media channel, whether it's, say Twitter, and all the different things that are happening. It makes you feel connected closer to the U23 team, to the women's team, to the youth team. I think each club individually has done a really good job at making that connection and saying, okay, if you're a fan of Manchester City, there's no reason why you shouldn't be supporting the Manchester City U23 team, the youth team, the women's team, etc. And I think that goes along the way for not just Manchester City, but other clubs too. So from the club angle, that's a strong pull to kind of get people into watching these games and cheering off the team, no matter which team it is, when men's, women's, youth, etc. So I think it's a positive thing, and I think it's like with anything with soccer, especially in terms of coverage, it's going to take time. It's going to take time to kind of build up this audience. But I think, if anything, we've talked about this last week. Is there too much soccer on TV? Well, we'll just wait. There's going to be even more, which is great news in terms of being able to access what you want and being able to watch your favorite team or player. So, Jonathan, for those listeners who are tuning in, where can people find you on Twitter and reach out to you?
Here we go. They can find me at The Goalkeeper. And I think enough of them have probably found me at this point sometimes. breaking news, fellas.
Okay.
Right as we're wrapping up the show. The New York Red Bulls and Ali Curtis have, in their words, mutually agreed to part ways.
We knew that was coming. We knew that was coming.
That took a while, though, from the first kind of initial rumors, like a month ago? And then kind of what's been happening for the past month? You know what I mean? Kind of smoke and mirrors or who knows what. Interesting. All right, Kartik. So where can people find you if they want to hit you up on Twitter or Facebook and send you a message?
You can find me at KKFLA737 on Twitter. My Twitter team isn't quite as active as Jonathan's, but it's close. I think we're two of the more active in the soccer intelligentsia community here in the United States. And thank you for that breaking news on Ali Curtis. We knew it was coming, and maybe we broke it here, not first, but first time we've discussed on a podcast. And I don't know how that impacts Jesse Marsh. He's done such a great job, but he was Ali Curtis's guy. So let's see what kind of leash he has with Red Bull in the next few years.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening, listeners. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. And be sure to send us your feedback or questions so we can read those out on air. And Kartik Krishna, over to you, sir.
Enjoy your football.